It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, the scariest thing in the world apparently is a mirror. All of the racists are yelling racist. Wait till you hear this piece of sound from a teacher in Pflugerville, Texas. Two, understanding the FTX scandal. Could it be a scandal that includes money laundering via Ukraine for American politicians? And could it be the beginning of a massive collapse of our economy? Three, big week. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Monday. Big episode of the Will Cain Podcast on this Monday. My guest today is the president of the Brownstone Institute, Jeffrey Tucker. He's going to walk us through something that is absolutely mystifying, at least to me. And that is cryptocurrency. The crypto exchange, FTX, its fall, the scandal, Ukraine, politicians, and what it reveals about all of our 401k to come. But first, let's get started with story number one. One, a fascinating video was making the rounds and going viral this past weekend. It was being shared by the likes of Tariq Nasheed and Rex Chapman and Roland Martin. You know, some of the biggest race hustlers on the internet. The video was of a teacher in Pflugerville, Texas, white, older, gray-bearded man, talking to a diverse set of middle schoolers, mostly black, some Latino, some white. And he says in this video that he is ethnocentric and that he, like everyone else, believes his race is superior. The internet goes crazy. One, can you see it? Here is a racist. Everybody's worldview on the left, everybody's worldview among the woke is validated because, of course, they're looking for, under every cover, an avowed white supremacist. And now here in the embodiment of this teacher, they got one. Or so they think. Listen to this video out of Pflugerville, Texas.
Deep down in my heart, I'm ethnocentric, which means I think my race is the superior one.
Oh!
White is better than all.
No, let me finish. Okay. I think everybody thinks that, they're just not honest about it.
Hey, I'm not racist, though. I like people, all types of kinds.
Did I say I don't like people?
People only
you
think that.
Wait, so you said you are what? You are racist?
You're saying you're like...
Now, that audio, in my estimation, is clearly racist. But I'm not sure that Chapman and Nasheed caught the white supremacist that they think they caught. I think they might have cast their fishing lure out and actually caught the back of their own shirt. I think, I don't know, but it's my estimation, there's a high likelihood that what they're actually staring into here with this video is a mirror. That what they've actually found is themselves, and they did in find a racist. What I'm saying, and I don't know, and I really emphasize I don't know, is that my bet, and I would bet the farm on this, but that my bet is this teacher you just heard, this teacher's been through DEI training. Every corporate HR department in America, everyone's taught how to evaluate hidden bias as part of that, for example. Many people are forced to read White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo or How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. And in that training and in those books, you're taught specifically that everyone is racist, that white supremacy is not only something that exists within the fabric of America and our structures, but exists within the heart of man. And the only way that you can become an anti-racist is to come face to face with that reality. Now, what are the odds that a KKK white supremacist, avowed racist, that believes he is racially superior to African Americans or Latinos, takes a job in a highly diverse school district teaching middle school children how to better their lives? What are the odds? Now, listen, as is always the case, I want to emphasize something here. I believe out and out racists exist. I'm not disavowing the idea that they exist. I'm just a little skeptical that they're middle school teachers in Pflugerville and perfectly willing to espouse their racism knowingly being recorded by their students. I'm just a little skeptical. I don't know, but what I think is this guy sounds exactly like Robin DiAngelo. This guy sounds exactly like he's been listening to Ibram X. Kendi. I think he's acknowledging what they ask. Oh, you have this in your heart. You live in a white supremacist culture and you are a white supremacist. And he says at the end, whoa, you gotta let me say my whole thing here. That's not what I'm saying. He's saying, and that makes me, I think he says at the end there, that makes me righteous to acknowledge this, something to that extent. I don't know, once again, but I think this guy is trying to teach essentially the basic, at least pop cultural version of the tenets of critical race theory. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not excusing this teacher. I just think that you've caught a racist. Just not the racist you think. I think that you cast your lure, but you caught your own shirt. I think you're staring deep into the mirror. I don't think you understand exactly what your words sound like until you hear them back. And it takes the innocence of children laughing at some of this racist nonsense to, you would hope, expose the accepted racism in our culture. Oh, white supremacy is not accepted. It's rejected. Everyone agrees that racism is ugly. But there's a certain segment of our population now that believes that a different kind of racism is acceptable. That's the racism I think you're hearing in this video. I think they don't actually understand, does, for example, Rex Chapman. This guy sounds exactly like him. I don't think he knows he's caught himself. I don't think they know that this teacher is them, and they are the racist.
All right, we're going to step aside here for just a moment. Stay tuned.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Story number two. This week, a massive scandal in the world of cryptocurrency. It goes like this. A crypto exchange entitled FTX, one of the biggest in the industry and one that might have hit your radar, Super Bowl ad with Larry David, sponsorships with Steph Curry, advertisements with Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen, naming rights to the stadium for the Miami Heat. FTX imploded. FTX went from a valuation of $32 billion to zero in days. Now, FTX was created by a man named Sam Bankman-Fried. He's 30 years old. He went to MIT. Before founding FTX just a few years ago, he was at a quant trading firm. That means they don't actually see the value of companies. They just look at the momentum of it throughout the day and break it into somehow predictable, they think predictable, numbers. Now, SBF, as he's known, became a bit of a star. And then not only crypto, but in Silicon Valley, because he flew the flag of effective altruism, that whatever he made, he was going to give away. And he did indeed give a ton of it away. There are questions about whether or not a lot of it went to Ukraine. We know that a lot of it went to Democratic politicians. He's the second biggest donor to Democrats behind George Soros. But it's possible that this story, first we have to understand it, and then understand what it means for the economy at large. And I have the perfect guest today. He's the president of the Brownstone Institute. His name is Jeffrey Tucker. He wrote a book on Bitcoin back in 2015. He understands true value. He also is a fan, I think that's fair to say, of cryptocurrency. And he's perfect to not only help us break down and understand the story, but point where it might be headed. Here's Jeffrey Tucker. Jeffrey Tucker, I'm so glad to have you today here on the Will Cain podcast to help us understand what feels like, with very little understanding for the common man, yet still feels like a very big story. Let's start maybe with the main character in this story. What can you tell me about the infamous SBF?
Right. So he was a physics major who got a lot of social justice in his head and began to realize that he was looking for a new angle on how to market cryptocurrency, right? And, you know, the anti-government philosophy of the usual crypto crowd, oh, buy Bitcoin to get away from the government and secede from the Fed and have your own private money and, you know, change the world towards freedom. He went the opposite direction and realized that he could market his little business with, some version of ESG, right? I mean, and DEI and all the fashionable social justice causes. So he came up with this idea called effective altruism. So he wasn't in it to make money for himself. He was in it to support good causes and to give all of his money away. And he drives an inexpensive car and he dresses in a shabby way. And it was all, you know, kind of a virtue signaling within the crypto space. And this was new, actually, for the crypto world, you know, which had usually been about, you know, kind of a cowboy, you know, anarchism, you know, let's get away from the government and do our own thing. He went the opposite way. So he developed very tight relations with the left, basically.
Tell me about that relationship, because it seems like he did this, he performed this virtue signaling very successfully. He cozied up to the Democratic Party, and in fact, he cozied up to the American government, where he was dealing with and encouraging government agencies that would ultimately oversee his company, FTX.
Right. So the issue of regulation has always been a controversial one within the crypto space. On one hand, you have these people who say we should not have be regulated at all. This is a disaster. All the regulations will only lead to more corruption and will normalize our ventures. We're not here to be more normal. We're here to be revolutionaries. That was always the old attitude. Then you had the kind of establishment crypto people come along and say, no, we got to play nice with regulators because we need the rule of law. And we're going to get regulated anyway. Better we have a foot at the table. So that was the basic division. The people who were against regulation at all costs, and the other people said, look, we're going to get regulated, we might as well play along with them. We don't like it, but we're going to have to play along. So these regulators need us. That was the... Well, he had a third option, which is we should lobby for regulation, we should be regulated, and we should be friendly with the government and reach out to the regulators as friends and beg them to control our industry. Well, this is very exciting for a lot of people on the left, and he made huge overtures. You know, as we've seen pictures of him at conferences with, you know, Bill Clinton, and he was, you know, a very high dollar donor to the Democratic Party. I think he was the second largest donor in the midterms, giving away more than, you know, like $100 million, you know, and that's what he meant by effective altruism, which is supporting causes that you believe in, which is basically supporting the Democrats. So, and it was a clever trick for him, and it gave him cover to essentially run a racket. And the racket was complicated, but basically what he was hoping for was the regulators to look the other way by paying them off. I mean, that's my read on the situation. And so in a sense, it was a brilliant a trick, unprincipled to be sure, and may turn out to be, you know, very highly criminal. But it was a scam to pump up his coin called FTT, and to get customers for his exchange called FTX, and that's what it was, all a marketing racket basically,
and an insurance scheme, essentially buying insurance from the federal government from politicians who would ultimately be there to hopefully bail him out one day. So we set the stage. Here's a 30 year old entrepreneur in the business of cryptocurrency who plants as his flag that he is an effective altruist. Whatever he makes, he intends to give away. And I want to get into some of that in just a moment. As you point out, One of the ways he gave that money away was he was the second largest donor behind only George Soros to Democratic politicians.
Right.
And it was all in service of FTX. And as you mentioned, FTT, which was his own personal currency that he created. But before we get into the scheme, as you mentioned, tell me about the legitimate business of FTX. For many of us right now, by the way, FTX is not probably completely foreign because they were very active in retail customer advertising and marketing. They had gotten the naming rights to the Miami Heat Stadium. They had done a deal with Gisele Bündchen and Tom Brady, with Steph Curry in the sports world. So FTX was big. What did FTX do?
FTX is a crypto exchange. Back in 2013, the federal regulators began to heavily regulate exchanges. Now, by what I mean by exchanges is the people who board you to crypto and then offboard you, the on-ramps and off-ramps from dollar to crypto and back again. That's always been, of course, a major issue within the crypto space. I mean, we've always known, I've known since the very early times, that crypto is brilliant within its own ecosystem, but getting into it and getting out of it is always been an issue for federal regulators. So in the early days, I'm talking about, you know, in the 2012 and early 2013, everybody was getting into the exchange business. You know, I'm gonna take your dollars and give you crypto. I'm gonna take your crypto and give you dollars. And it was a business that there were thousands of companies involved in this. And then the federal regulators came along and said, no. If you're going to be a crypto exchange like that, you have to register as a money exchange business in every state. So suddenly the costs of just getting into that business became huge. So, you know, especially by those standards of those times, it was more than six figures even to get into the business. So immediately destroyed, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of would-be entrepreneurs that were very excited about crypto and basically ended up with just a handful of exchanges. Well, over time, and certainly in the U.S., it became very difficult to become an exchange. It was as difficult to become a Bitcoin crypto exchange as it was to become a bank. And so So there were just a handful in the U.S. The regulations on exchanges were much lighter in where he was in Bermuda. And so, you know, that was fine for him. And so he was able to start his own exchange by getting around U.S. regulations. And as far as we can tell, he began to basically run a money laundering operation out of what looks like out of his own exchange. So that's what the exchange does. And it's funny that it became so famous and popular among, U.S., the left and, you know, the fashionable people in the U.S. and became, and just since 2019, this thing's only been around 3 years and just very quickly wiped out in market capitalization all the U.S. exchanges. So that way, there was, everybody in the industry knew that there's something fishy going on, certainly in retrospect.
Something fishy going on would be an understatement in retrospect, because right. What we saw was, what, $32 billion in value wiped out virtually overnight, from $32 billion down to zero. And you described that as a money laundering scheme. So what actually was Samuel Bankman-Fried doing at FTX?
Well, he was giving a lot of money away and investing in. He had a very close relationship with another organization he founded called Alameda Research, and there were very close ties there. And it turns out Alameda was holding a lot of its assets in FTT, which was FTX's own token. I feel like I'm telling this story again for like the sixth time, which is to say this keeps happening in this space. There is no perpetual motion machine in the crypto space. You can't have the business that's capitalized by your own token that itself is only highly valued due to confidence in your business. I mean, this is just, it keeps happening over and over. So when this news came out, I thought, oh God, here we go again. Why didn't we see this company coming? Well, what happened is that Binance, a competitive exchange, The blockchain space is very sort of open source if you're willing to take the time and look at it. They just noticed that Alameda Research was heavily capitalized by FTT, which is FTX's own coin, and realized that this whole thing was propped up by high valuations. So if the valuations went down, Alameda Research would go down too, and then all the companies that it had recently bought out of purely altruistic motives, as he says, we have to buy these companies because we don't want, because we're good citizens of the crypto space and all this nonsense blather he was saying. Well, there's another layer to this, which is it looks as if he was using customer funds out of FTX to shore up Alameda Research, which is in turn investing. So, so here you have this sort of nerd guy sitting on billions and billions of dollars from customers, which he's supposed to keep in custody, instead, throwing it over to invest. And by the way, all of this would have gone on forever were it not for the market downturn. This is where it reminds you of Bernie Madoff or any of the rest of the schemes. I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
Right.
It's not funny for people who lost a lot of money, but it just keeps happening, and it's enormously frustrating.
So I want to walk through what you just said one by one, and there's three elements of what you just described that I want to go through. First of all, what was the scam within FTX? And I saw this, and I'm going to try to break this down again for the layman here. I saw this tweet, and I want you to tell me if you think this is a fair characterization. It's by someone named Lynn Alden, and she said, imagine McDonald's makes its own money, and let's call them clown bucks, and it keeps most of the clown bucks and then sells some of the clown bucks out to the market. McDonald's then uses their remaining clown bucks as collateral for actual loans, real money, and then people remember clown bucks aren't real. So FTX made its own money, clown bucks, in FTT, and then used that as collateral to buy other companies and get loans, essentially financing its own business with, I don't want to call it fake money, but its own created valuation of a token.
With confidence in its own token. But we've seen this again and again in this space, right? I mean, there's a famous guy who's very articulate and fun, and everybody loves him, and he's pushing a crypto coin, and that crypto coin, everybody buys it, and so suddenly he's heavily capitalized, and then he spends that money doing flashy things. And in his case, it was altruism. Other people, it's Lambos. Of course, he wasn't quite as altruistic as he says. But the whole thing depends upon higher and higher valuations, because you get so levered up that, a slight downturn in the market's going to expose everything. So he had every confidence that he could keep going on like this forever. It was only exposed because the market fell due to the tight money.
So is this different, Jeffrey? When you described the Lamborghinis for a minute, my mind went to, I don't know that this is unique to crypto. Although you say that this has happened multiple times in crypto, I'm not sure it's unique to crypto. It happens in the market at large. It happens in banking. It happens in my industry, the media. It reminds me of a company that was founded well over a decade ago, and people might remember Vice. And Vice had a very charismatic leader who had a flashy right. lifestyle and said he understood Gen Z or Gen X or millennials or whatever it may have been. And because of that, he attracted investment from legacy media organizations, hundreds of millions of dollars, in increasing rounds of capital raise that continued to push up the valuation of Vice. And I hear what you're describing now with SBF is he did something similar, although instead of, Lamborghinis, the way that he got, I think he got Silicon Valley to give him a ton of money in investing in FTX, or to buy FTT, was through the flashy mechanism of virtue signaling, that I'm going to give it all away, that I'm altruistic. And that sucked in the sophisticated investor?
Yeah, that was his value added to the ongoing cons in this space, and there are many. But his particular sort of spin on it was to be, to be the innovator of effective altruism, which he describes, as a religious conversion. He realized that it was wrong just to make a lot of money, but rather you should make a lot of money and then give it all away. So it's just a nice bit of flim flam, perfectly constructed for 2019 and 2020.
Right.
But we should be clear too that there's a good amount of fraud going on here, because the idea of these exchanges is not that they should be running fractional reserves. The idea is that when you want your money back, you should be able to get your money back. this is what happens when people use these exchanges as custodians, and they all do, but they can't be levered up because if the slightest change in market conditions, and suddenly everything falls apart. I mean, the last company that did that, I even forgot the name of it, was promising to pay high interest on the cryptos that they're holding, that they would lend out, which by itself is kind of sketchy. But FTX was not, I don't think depositors in FTX believed that their money was being used for other purposes. So he's literally using depositors' funds. And again, it's like Bernie Madoff, this works until people lose confidence, and then everything just falls apart. In the case of FTX, everything fell apart, and it's just a ferociously quick amount of time.
And that brings me to my second observation of what you had to say. This is actually, as you mentioned, the fraudulent or criminal element of this, I believe. So SBF's personal net worth went to $16 billion at one point, went down to zero. As I mentioned, FTX was up to $32 billion. And I don't know if this is accurate, but $10 billion or so? Or what is the number that is still missing? There's an incredibly large amount of money that is missing. And from what I read, we're talking about crypto accounts of small investors, to your point, to the tune of perhaps over 100,000 different creditors.
Yeah, that could be. I think we're still working on numbers. I saw 413 million just outright gone. And what I mean by that is that the hacking happened. Now, this is most likely an internal hacking, right? Moving things from hot wallets to cold wallets just to kind of get it out. Further robbery from customers. I think we're still waiting for the final accounting, but it's going to be grim. And with that is going to come, I hope, this is where it gets interesting. There's a lot of talk about the relationship of FTX with the Ukrainian government, which I'm sure you've read about that. And please to say, if you haven't, let me know. But apparently the allegations are that the Ukrainian government was using FTX as an exchange and depositing a lot of money that they got from U.S. aid, and so that's where the money laundering comes in, and then that money in turn is given to the Democratic politicians to continue to vote more aid. So if that's true, that's a real scandal. And Kim.com just tweeted that out. And I've read this a lot of different places. I don't mean to pass on rumors. We're still waiting for a verification for a lot of this stuff. But
no, I've read something similar, but I want you to flesh that out for me so that I fully understand. So the idea is donations, or not donations, it's outright theft, I would assume, from small investor or investor accounts into FTX. Was funneling money then into Ukraine, or was it people knowingly contributing to Ukraine through FTX, whatever the mechanism, but then money then in turn funneled back to Democratic politicians who are, as you mentioned, voting to fund bigger funding through the United States government towards Ukraine?
Right. So a lot of the aid that U.S. gave to Ukraine in this war has a tendency to sort of vanish, without a great deal of transparency about what happens to it. And the allegation is that a lot of this money was deposited with FTX, which in turn was given back in the form of campaign contributions to Democrats. And that sort of thing that is really gritty and really ugly, and it definitely needs to be investigated. But whether it will be or not is another question, and which gets us back to the FTX virtue signaling partisan scam that is running from the beginning. If you play nice with government regulators, you can get away with a lot of other things. This is, I would say, has really introduced a complication in the culture of crypto, because up to now it's been assumed that if you don't want to play ball with regulators, you might be up to no good. Now we have every reason to think that the more willing you are to play ball with regulators, the more you might be trying to cover up what you're up to that's actually unsustainable or up to no good. It's very interesting. Right. So, it's going to affect the whole culture of the community behind crypto.
Right. And while it's true that Sam Bankman-Fried's donations went almost exclusively to Democratic politicians, it looks like, he was making donations to anyone that was on the Consumer Financial Trading Commission, which oversaw cryptocurrencies, and also the Senate Ag Chair, who oversees then the CFTC. And those include Republicans as well. Donations going to John Boozman of Arkansas, Republican. The chair of the Senate Ag Committee is Debbie Stabenow, Democrat. And again, I think, as you mentioned, I think you've said this word several times. These are allegations, but if they hold a kernel of truth, this is bigger than a bunch of crypto investors simply getting their wallets frozen and their money stolen, which is in of itself a huge story. But we're talking about, because we're talking about billions upon billions of dollars, but we're talking about potentially here an even bigger scandal that involves the United States government, Ukraine, and fraud,
and the whole crypto regulatory space, which everybody says they need more regulation. But if this is the way the regulations are going to pan themselves out, where they just favor certain companies that are engaging in fraud, it discredits even that cause, right? So it's very difficult for anybody to use the FTX failure and say, oh, that shows we need more regulation. Well, he was the top advocate of, and particular in, the sort of regulatory climate surrounding crypto, which is one of the reasons that everybody within the crypto space had become so annoyed by him and so suspicious of him. And this the war that Binance waged against him, which live on Twitter last week, was an amazing thing to see, because Binance was looking at purchasing FTX and did some due diligence and started noticing some funny things and started tweeting about them live. And it caused a real run. And so you're seeing a lot of people now in the crypto space. It's about time. By the way, all this stuff was going on, in the earliest years of crypto. I'm talking about, 2012, 2013. I mean, already you saw these kind of suspicious activities on the parts of these exchanges that were holding custody of people's coins. They were already. So it's weird to me that nearly 10 years later, we're still having to learn the lesson. You've got to be suspicious of these companies.
So finally, let's end with this. I mean, I think we've already put our finger on what could be potentially the biggest fallout. And if that is, in fact, these allegations regarding, money laundering through Ukraine back to politicians voting to support the war in Ukraine is true, that would be the biggest fallout from the story. But short of that, as you mentioned, I think it's Warren Buffett or Charlie Munger who has the famous saying that you never know who's swimming naked until the tide goes out.
That's a good phrase. I like that phrase, and that's exactly what's going on. And so the question is, what's driving the tide out? And what's doing that right now is Jerome Powell.
The higher interest rates.
It's changing everything. So we've been through 14 years of 0% interest rates. And I was looking at the data this morning about the latest federal funds rates, which are running, close to, I guess, 4% or something like that. If he really intends to achieve what he calls a terminal rate, which is a positive rate of interest, which is to say the federal funds rate above prevailing inflation rates, we've got a very long way to go. And you can see the kind of carnage that this has caused already. When I say carnage, I mean truth.
When I say carnage, I mean truth. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Truth.
Yes.
I mean, we need honesty in finance and in every area, not just in crypto space, but God knows we need it.
Exactly.
But we need it, across the board in finance, in these big tech companies that ballooned out of size during the lockdowns. During, for all the people that have benefited so much from these subsidized liquidity that the Fed has been providing basically since 2008, if Powell is serious about this, and you can look at the charts, we've got a long way to go, and it's going to change everything about American finance. It could prompt a financial crisis. I don't know that for sure. But FTX, people that have been watching markets for a long time are giving me ominous signs that this FTX thing may be just the beginning.
That's what I wanted to get with it.
Just the beginning of a complete meltdown, not just of crypto, but of financial markets in general. And that's because there's a lot that needs to be exposed.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand correctly, because I find this fascinating, because now the story's bigger than crypto. It's about the economy at large. The argument that you're building, based upon that quote I gave you from Warren Buffett and or Charlie Munger, is that when the Fed prints money and keeps interest rates so low for so long, it rewards irrational investment. It rewards risk tolerance. And with more risk tolerance comes riskier, skeptical investments, even fraudulent ones, because you can get away with it because debt is no problem. But the minute that interest rates rise, now these highly leveraged speculative investments are exposed, and you're burning off the underbrush of the economy, all these bad investments. And what I hear you saying, and I want you to tell me if I've characterized this fairly, is FTX is certainly one of them, perhaps maybe the most extreme, but also just the first of these A, fraudulent, or B, highly speculative investments that are about to fall in this economy. And then the question goes, what happens to the economy?
Your description is absolutely beautiful. I think you did a great job describing that. This is a time of truth. And the VC investors are gone. The tolerance for high risk, you know, the confidence that market price is going to go up forever and ever. You're already starting to see the shifts in finance. People are looking for companies that pay interest, that pay dividends, that have real value behind them, and bailing out of these highly levered companies that just seem to live forever on magic and confidence and air. But the air is gone. You know, this is what Powell is doing. And by the way, I was not convinced that he was all in on this until very recently. Now I'm certain. His speech the other day at the latest 75 basis increase was really severe. He's determined to reach this terminal rate. He wants interest rates positive because he thinks that's the only way he's going to be able to achieve his inflation target of 2%. And we're nowhere near that right now. You adjust the federal funds rate for CPI right now, and we're still way, way below zero right now. And we've got a long way to go. So it's going to...
How much pain can we tolerate?
Well, and there's going to be a lot of pain. We've seen it in the real estate markets, a lot of pain. They're basically frozen right now. They're going to get worse. But I don't see Powell backing down, because he wants to go down in history as the only Fed governor since the 1960s who has a good reputation, which is Paul Volcker. And he wants to be Paul Volcker. He doesn't want to go down history for what he did after March 2020, which is once again drive down rates down to zero and unleash this inflation. He does not want that to be his legacy. So I would say he's standing up against a lot of political pressure right now. And he's going to keep going with this. And the consequences for the high-flying American, especially companies that lived off leverage, haven't made a profit in 5 years, is going to be devastating. If we can avoid a financial crisis, that would be a great thing. But I feel certain at this point that a recession, a formal recession, complete with unemployment in large sectors, is coming in the next year. It has to be. And I'm worried about the crypto sector, because, as you know, I'm a believer in this technology. That's not the same as saying I'm a believer in every company and every token, and that it's all going to go to the moon, all right? So I said the other day at a podcast that I'm expecting that the Bitcoin itself could test 10,000, and that it made all the headlines. I don't think that's a stretch at all. I mean, it could go much lower than that. That doesn't mean it's bad technology. It just means that it went up way too fast, too far, during a period of really loose credit and low standards. And everybody's looking the other way. FTX is just one symptom of a much larger problem. So we're going to have to get some truth and honesty and some real valuations out there and figure out what's really going on in the markets in a world of tight money, which we have not seen for the better part of 14 years.
Well, if that is true, prepare for pain. And FTX is and SBF are just the beginning. And so when the real big guys with the real speculative investments and the real fraud start getting exposed, we'll find out exactly how much pain tolerance does hold Jeffrey Powell or
Jerome
Powell.
Well, I like markets most when they tell the truth, because
I agree.
Politicians don't. Bureaucrats don't. The media does not. But market forces, they can be tricked for a very long time, but in the end, there's a hard wall. It's called economic law, and the numbers in the end have to add up. So there's nothing Washington can do about this. We're going to see the truth, and I'm excited about these times. As you say, it's going to be painful, but I'm glad for it, because you don't want to live in a world of leverage and fraud and fakery, or forever just, you know, living off perpetual motion machines that are going to die out.
Like every red-blooded American, I actually am excited for that future as well, the one that's based in truth. But like every red-blooded American, I'm so scared about my 401k that I don't know that I wouldn't take the sugar high of one more bump.
I know what you mean.
All right, Jeffrey Tucker, what an awesome conversation. Thank you for giving me some time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for such an intelligent interview.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jeffrey Tucker.
All right, we're going to step aside here for just a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. Big week ahead for everyone. On Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, former President Donald Trump is set to make, in his characterization, a major announcement. Most suspect this will be Trump announcing he is running for president in 2024. The campaign has already begun, as we've talked about. The missives, the attacks against Ron DeSantis, and then later Glenn Youngkin have already begun. So let the race begin. Trump, Pence, DeSantis, Pompeo, on to 2024. That night, Tuesday night, right before the announcement, I am scheduled to be hosting Tucker Carlson Tonight. So tune in a little bit early for that announcement. Tune in at 8 p.m. Eastern time and check me out on Tucker Carlson. Also this week, big week, because we are headed, me, Rachel, Pete, and really honestly the entire Fox News channel, to Hollywood, Florida, for the Patriot Awards. It'll be awesome. My Friday podcast will come to you from interviews there at the Patriot Awards. And that's good, because Pete Hegseth and I need to settle up or square up before another big part of this week. His Vikings pulled off a massive victory against the Buffalo Bills. Really one of the most insane games I've seen in quite some time. And guess who plays this coming Sunday? The Vikings and the Cowboys. Let the games begin. A massive week. So stick with us all throughout the week here on the Will Kane Podcast. Check me out on Tuesday night. Guest hosting Tucker Carlson Tonight. And we will have together, you and I, a big week. That's going to do it for me today here on the Will Kane Podcast. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review wherever you get your audio entertainment. And remember, you can watch the Will Kane Podcast on Rumble or on YouTube. Leave it a 5-star review, leave a comment, and I will appreciate it. I will see you again next time.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.